Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening. Another metaphor for the journey we are on, similar to the journey of the dark wood, is the journey of the labyrinth. We have a labyrinth when it's not under late season snow out back behind the church or next to the fellowship hall of the church. And if you haven't had a chance to see it or walk it because you're relatively new since the snow fell last fall, I encourage you to enjoy and journey on it sometime this spring, which is coming, we promise. And the labyrinth journey is an ancient one and a beautiful one. Within the church, many, many chapels or sanctuaries had labyrinths on their floors or in wooded places or grassy areas like we do to encourage people to walk that journey and to just enter into the time, the process of walking, of clearing one's mind. The goal, if we could say there's a goal, of the labyrinth is to get to the center. Really, the goal is the journey along the way, right? And then to come back out. And the center is deceptively close. Or when you're on your way out, the edge is deceptively close. And of course, you could very easily just walk across the labyrinth. There's nothing that keeps you inside it. And what I notice about it all the time is how close you come to the center and then back away from it. Or how much you pass by a similar place, but just on the other side of a row of rocks, and pass by and circle around again, right? Part of this journey of a labyrinth reminds us that we are in this motion that takes us seemingly right back to where we started or right past the same place again. Our lives are like that. And so we experience things in an almost cyclical or weaving way that takes us back to where we seem to have started. That's what we've done with the scripture today too, is to come back around to where we started or very close to where we started, but with somewhat different eyes, having taken some of this journey through the dark wood. So that's what I'm encouraging us to do today by looking again at our journey in the dark wood or our journey through the labyrinth and seeing how we come again and again to similar places, but with a different focus. So we return to this story that we heard at the beginning of Lent, and we return to the question of Jesus' time in the desert, as we explore the gift of the dark wood, the gift of temptation. That's right, not the curse of temptation, not the trial of temptation, the gift of temptation. Now, nearly every preacher I've ever heard talks about temptation as a very, very bad thing. So I was surprised when that was one of the gifts of the dark wood in this book, and that we were encouraged to explore the gift of temptation. But when you think about it, we realize that temptation is that which blesses us by clarifying and honing our call, our vision, and by helping us recognize whether or not we are on that path that leads us in the direction that God is calling us or not, that leads us not out of but through and in the dark wood or around and around in the labyrinth, but on the paths that bring us to our truer selves, who we are called to be at our very center, the people that Christ calls us to be. I recognized when I started thinking about temptation this way, as I was reading Alice's book and reflecting on it, that one of the things is that it starts with a promise, or a premise and a promise, about salvation that I take as a given, but that not everyone does. So I want to unpack that just a little bit. The idea that this journey through the dark wood or the journey through the labyrinth or seeing life as a journey where we are uncovering and discovering and being discovered by God, the premise starts with the idea that salvation, or the very point of our faith, is not, or rather we might say, is not merely about avoiding some sort of punishment after life. That in fact, when Jesus says, I have come so that you may have life and abundant life, or when Jesus says that God sent the Son into the world that people may not perish but have eternal life, that eternal abundant life starts now or started before now and is not just something later. And that what part of what it means to perish or to be disconnected from God has to do with, are we living in the place that God calls us to live now? Never mind about later. We got to get where we need to be now in this journey. We have to be discovered by God through emptying ourselves, through getting lost and letting God find us, through our uncertainty, and then letting God find us, call us, claim us, and walking into that journey and through that journey together with God. And that the purpose of salvation is to be the fullness of who God calls us to be throughout our eternal lives, which include our earthly lives. Focusing on only one or the other would be a little bit like saying, I'm so glad that I'm going to get a 90-minute hot stone massage. I'm not signed up for one yet, but I should. That sounds great. Because I really want my hand rubbed. That's great. That's wonderful. But that's not the point. That's not all of it. Right? There's a fullness here. And if we focus only on how we live in this life, or we focus only on wanting to avoid suffering later, then we miss the fullness of who God is calling to be. And that's not abundant life. The point of seeing temptation as a gift, Elnis says, is to understand that it's not about whether we do bad or good. It's about, are we doing the good that God is calling us to do? That thing which connects us to God, which is our deepest, truest self, our purpose, our vocation, our calling. The disciples, say James and John, were great at fishing. And fishing is a good and important thing. It feeds your family. You can sell the fish and then feed other people's family and buy your supplies and do it. It's a perfectly good thing to do. But their calling was something deeper and truer. It was more good. It was something at the center of who they were, to call and to fish for and to journey with people and to feed the hunger in people's souls and people's spirits, not just in their bellies. It was a fuller sense of the good they were called to do. Temptation challenges us to find the fullness, the best good, the most authentic part of ourselves that God is calling us to, and to live it, and helps us figure out when they're there, when we're there. We see this in Jesus' own temptation. Now, if we're tempted by something, it's really easy for us to imagine a kind of exaggeration of temptation. In fact, that's pretty much what I think all of our thoughts about temptation are pretty exaggerated. We all know better than to do something truly horrible. It's, in fact, hardly tempting to do something truly horrible. I mean, we might for a minute think, wow, if I had unlimited power, I would just, you know, take things from other people so that I could have everything for myself. But almost every time that thought, if it enters our head, leaves it nearly immediately, right? I mean, we know, now that's not what I would do. Of course not. That's not the right thing to do. We know this. And Jesus is just like us, except probably better, which is like a new motivational poster. You can put my name on that one, right? There's my deep theological thought for today. Becca says, Jesus is just like us, but probably better. Probably. He's not going to be tempted by something obviously evil. I mean, if you're going to think like the accuser in this passage and test Jesus, you can't put in front of him, you know, hurting people and taking things for himself and all that stuff. He's not going to be fooled by that. If we wouldn't be fooled by that, he sure isn't going to be fooled by that. That's not effective temptation. And that's not a temptation that's going to refine him in any way. But look again at what Jesus is offered, because these are not bad things. Sure, maybe he's hungry, and so the accuser says, turn this rock to bread for your selfish feeding of your hunger. But that's probably in itself not much of a temptation to Jesus. But what if what that represents is his ability to turn stones, generally speaking, to bread? What if what he's being offered is the opportunity to feed not only his own hunger, but the hunger of the world? Do you know how many stones there are in the world? And if Jesus could turn them all to bread, there would never be another hungry person. Never another distended belly, never a child dying of malnutrition or starvation. Now that's tempting. I bet that's really tempting if you're Jesus, and that seems like a possibility even. I mean, it might not be a temptation for me because that's not something I can imagine would be possible, but if somebody said, Becca, I could give you the power to end hunger like that, that's not a bad thing, right? That's a really, really good thing. Throw yourself from the top of this building and let the angels catch you before you hit the ground so that people will see and know that you are God's Messiah. No more of this arguing with people about who you are. No more of this having to, you know, suffer and die and all that because people don't know, don't trust, don't believe who you are. Never another person whose spiritual hunger is eating them up inside because they don't know the love and the blessing and the abundance of a God who would send God's own self to us. You could make the whole world believe in who you are, just like that. And no one needs to suffer that spiritual hunger again. That's not a bad thing. That sounds really, really good. And if you're Jesus, I bet that's really, really tempting. Look at the kingdoms of the world, the fiefdoms, the monarchies, the oligarchies, the democracies even, of the world. I can give you control of all of them. And what would Jesus do if he had control of every government and every power on the face of this earth, but make it more just and more loving and more peaceful? I give you world peace. I give you universal justice, Jesus. I give you the opportunity to bend the world to your wise and beautiful and gentle control. That's not a bad thing. That gives me goosebumps right now. I'd love that. Yes, please, Jesus, can you go back and say, yes, I'll take all the kingdoms of the world so that I can make them beautiful and just and fair and loving. For those who love Tolkien, it's when Gandalf or Galadriel is tempted to take the Dark Lord's One Ring of Power because they are good and they would use it for good, right? We can take ultimate power and make it our own and use it for justice and kindness and compassion. That's tempting. Far more tempting. In fact, the more good someone is, the more loving and compassionate and magnificent, magnanimous a person one is, the more tempting that sounds. That's how the accuser hopes to trick Jesus. That's a real temptation. But even that, feeding people's physical hunger entirely, feeding people's spiritual hunger entirely, making the world the just and righteous shalom of God, all in one fell swoop, even all of those things taken together is not the fullness of what Jesus is called to do. Because there are added components to that, like not making the world God's shalom, but giving the world the tools to make itself God's shalom, that we have to be in this journey together. And until we are moved by faith and courage and love and God's sacrifice to us to participate in the unfolding of God's righteousness and God's beauty and justice and peace, it is not complete. It is less than the good to which Jesus is called. It still looks really good. It's just not the good he's called to do. It's not the fullness of what God has given him to do. It's so good, but it's still somewhat bad. It's so good, but it is not the good. This happens in our lives, where we get doing things that are really good things, and we're helping people, and we're serving people, and we feel pretty good about it, but we may not yet be doing the good that God has called us to do. And that doesn't mean that we need to quit our jobs and go live as ascetics in the middle of the desert, or that we need to sell all our possessions and give them to the poor, although Jesus does recommend that for some people. But it does mean that we need to listen to where our longing is still calling us. Because that temptation to do other than what we're doing can tell us one of two things, or a little bit of each of these two things, can tell us two things. One is that something is lacking, right? If we're tempted for a different vocation or a different activity or more stuff or more time in quiet and solitude or different kinds of relationships in our lives, if we're tempted, that might tell us that something's missing, something's lacking, something is unhealthy that we need to address, and that gift can push us towards seeking it. Maybe if we're tempted, for example, by what some might call laziness or sloth, but what I've started to recognize more and more is, no, I need time to take care of myself, right? That's not laziness, that's I need time to take care of myself. That longing tells me that something's missing, that maybe in my busyness and my doing, I'm not taking care of myself or my family. It pushes me to examine what's happening in my life and say, okay, why am I longing for something else? There's all kinds of like fun chemical things that happen in our bodies, and I've learned that like craving chocolate might be a craving for iron, and that if you're craving chocolate, part of your body is saying, you know, feed me spinach, which is totally counterintuitive, right? And I'd much rather have chocolate than spinach, but my body might much rather have spinach. It just doesn't know how to tell me, Becca, eat spinach. But listening to your body's temptation, if you know enough about it, might clue you in that there's a nutrient missing. I mean, it literally happens physically in our bodies. The same thing in our spiritual lives. Listening to our spiritual yearnings might tell us something's missing here. What is it that I need to change, add, subtract, to be closer to the path that God's calling me to be? And again, that doesn't mean I need to change my whole vocation, but maybe I'm missing the part where I serve someone else. Or maybe I'm missing the part where I tend to my spiritual care and growth. How do I make space for that? Because I have a longing for that in my life. The other thing that temptation can tell us is, in some ways, what Jesus reveals in his final answer to the accuser, which is, nope, everything I need is right here. It confirms and affirms where we are. You know, we feel the pull of temptation towards something else, and when we really let ourselves look at it and think about it, would I be happier if I quit my job and I did that thing over there? When we really let ourselves think about it and kind of imagine down that path, we say, you know what, no. I'm fulfilled right here where I am. I'm feeling right now, as I explore this, I'm feeling that this is where God's called me to be. And that affirmation gives us strength in that moment, right? Gives us the courage to take another few steps deeper into the dark wood or further along the labyrinth. So it can confirm, it can challenge and stretch us, temptation, and it can confirm where we are. It is a way of kind of course correcting along life's journey. This is why in the writings of the Hebrew Bible and the kind of the mythology that surrounds it, the devil, Hasatan, the accuser, is not necessarily an evil force, right? In the book of Job, same character, is in heaven with God having this conversation, whatever that looks like, not necessarily an evil force. That force with pushes, shapes, tests. We experience that as challenge and as evil, but pushes and hones and refines our calling and our gift. And he does the same thing here with Jesus. Finally, I think we can be tempted to see our faith or our salvation in a limited way, just as we can be tempted to see our calling in a limited way. We go back to that idea that our spiritual lives are not just about the spirit, and not just about our spirits as if they suddenly wink into being when our bodies stop working physically. Our spirits are working now. And our spiritual lives are about our physical, logistical, emotional, psychological, spiritual lives every day, throughout our lives. and the temptation to see the work that we do in this place, in our spiritual journey, as only being about a reward or a punishment later, is just like seeing our calling as being only about maybe feeding physical hunger, when we know that we are also, at the same time, feeding spiritual hunger, working for justice in the world, not because Jesus forces us to, but because we are called to live as he lived. Temptation is that gift which hones our calling and shapes us and pushes us, asks us to question, am I where God's calling me to be? Or to affirm, yes, I am in the place that God has called me to be. And that is so, so good. Amen.